Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by old friend David Wurzberger of SNY. Wurz, good evening, sir. How are you?
Doing well, Chase. How about you?
Not too bad. How many? What is it like? What is the difference between the amount of people that call you Wurz and the amount of people that call you David?
The Wurz thing was funny because that was like a natural nickname, just sort of thrust upon me. Which you like, you know, the people that make up their own nicknames. No one really likes to actually call them that. But it got to a point where like I'm in like middle school and like kids' parents are calling me Wurz and not David. So it's actually pretty hysterical. I like it. I mean, obviously, as I've evolved to like professional world, then people just call me David. But, right, you know, Wurz still lingers. It's still fighting the good fight. It's trying to stick around.
Okay. There you go. What have you been up to since we last recorded? How was your summer? How's the fall looking? What's new with you in New York?
Yeah, so summer flew by. You know, just been trying to enjoy it, get outside and make some plans before, you know, the next variant screws everything up again. Yeah, I mean, can't complain. It's been a fun summer, and you know, fall, winter is lock it down season and get back to the grindstone. So that's the idea.
Well, you're also in the college football hotbed that is New York City. So I imagine you've been just enthralled by early SEC dominance. You're watching Tennessee Bowling Green on Thursday, looking out for me in attendance. You were like, oh man, Chase is so lucky. Like, yeah, I'm in the mecca of college football here in New York City, and all the Tennessee Vol fans just lining the streets of Queens, Brooklyn, Manhattan. People forget there's just a bunch of them all over the place, that you were like, man, wouldn't it be good to get down there? But what is the atmosphere? Are people worried? Like, is Columbia even playing football this fall? Do we get like the NYU kids all just like finding their own team with NYU not having a football program? Like, what is the college football feeling like in New York at the moment?
I thought the quintessential college football experience was freezing your buns off at the Pinstripe Bowl every year. Mm. Isn't that what all college football fans look forward to annually? I thought that was what it was.
But you went to Stony Brook, yeah, right?
I did go to Stony Brook, yeah.
Okay.
They got some, you know, some FCS. FCS is a bad one, right?
It's a bad one? No, it's just smaller.
It's the bad one? No, which one's the good one? FBS is the good one, right?
FBS is, I mean, good in, like, it's the bigger one. FBS is the big one.
The bigger one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, this is why you have me on to talk basketball.
So not
tailgates were fun at Stony Brook. I'll tell you that much. Tailgates were good. I'm pretty sure the defense was good for a couple of years there. And we had a couple of good running backs. And one tight end that made it.
So you're ready to go. Are you tailgating? What is the season ticket situation at Stony Brook? Like, is there a backlog? Is it one of those situations where you're just hoping someone gives up their seats for a game this fall so you can get back out there? How rabid is that Seawolf fan base?
Oh, it's all of those things you just mentioned, and not like me just not having been to a game since my first homecoming, because I don't feel like it. But yeah, I don't think I'd have to hit up a scalper or anything like that outside of kind of Pila Bowl Stadium or anything like that. But it's fine, man. You know, the small school vibes are always fun. Though I've always wanted what it's like to go to like a Tennessee or a Bama or something crazy like that.
Well, you're welcome here anytime, Bert. You're welcome here anytime. We'll make it happen.
Might take you up on that.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm here. I got you. Don't forget, folks, you can listen to Verts and all kinds of other great NBA guests every week on this very podcast. Verts writes at smy.tv.com, so go check that out if you have not already. He does great work covering the Knicks at SNY. Great website, so go check that out. You can follow Verts on Twitter. Is it underscore Verts or Verts underscore?
It's underscore Verts.
That's what I thought. And then you can follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com to get access to all my previous episodes. Go subscribe to the newsletter at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/ChaseThomasWriter. And if you like listening to Verts and I today and you're an Apple Podcast listener, don't forget an easy thing you can do to help the show continue to grow, besides telling a friend, sharing it with someone else you think might like it, is leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Verts, there was a great, 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 great piece by Chris Mannix in Sports Illustrated today on Paul Pierce and what's up with him now, how he got to the league, his upcoming Hall of Fame enshrinement, what's next. This piece was phenomenal. What did you make of it?
I didn't get to finish it quite yet, but I will say of some of the small tidbits I read, I know you wanted to bring up when Doc Rivers was not exactly, he wasn't thrilled that his team was getting cooked by Paul Pierce, mm-hmm. and he had some choice words to describe him.
Let's just read the quote.
If you want to get the exact quote out, yeah.
So in 1999, this is coming from Mannix's piece, Doc Rivers was coaching in Orlando. Rivers recalls a regular season game against Boston where Pierce went on a scoring binge in the first half. At halftime, Rivers tore into his team. I said, "How is a fat, unathletic guy fucking killing us?" he said. But then you realize he wasn't fat at all. He was in great shape. He was a super athlete, but he was so fundamentally sound that you often missed his athleticism. What a quote. That's like the best quote in this story. The best quote is Paul Pierce being upset about them asking him to pass to Jerry Welsh. Like, shots fired at Mr. Welsh.
I don't know about you. When I read that, I sort of like immediately thought I had one player comp immediately, and you don't see these two comps at all, but I thought James Harden, and I kind of think like just the sort of physical, how watching them you see the blubber, and so you think there's like less athleticism there than you might think, but it's actually just its strength, its speed, it's all there. Like, to, not only is it actually there, but it's like to a strong, like Paul Pierce and James Harden are top tier athletes, like even in the NBA, even in their own, you know, their own peer group. I just thought that was funny, and it made me want to put together like an all blubber team, like Jokic. Mm. You could throw Jokic in there. Like you don't think he has that crazy strength, but even now that he's toned down and he's, you know, he's kept up like banging down low, and it goes to show that, you know, a lot of these looks are deceiving.
For sure. And Pierce was just, I mean, it's crazy to think about how people would view his career if he doesn't get the trade in 2007, 2008, right? Like if Ainge doesn't pull the trigger, because they were in a really bad space before that, and he wanted to trade, and like what if he gets traded to Dallas like he wanted to in the piece by telling Cuban he's their missing piece, like, man, that's different. Like Dirk would Paul Pierce at the end of his career, like, or end of his prime, like that is completely different. We don't get KG, Rondo, Ray Allen, Pierce, Garnett, like we don't get any of that perk. Like, that whole thing is gone. It's just how we view basketball, and we don't get the Lakers-Celtics iconic finals matchup. Like, so much has changed just by Danny Ainge pulling the trigger that summer and acquiring Allen and KG when he did. But it is interesting, too, that Pierce has changed his mind, I guess, of late, and he's not as stubborn as he was. He doesn't think that... Rondo will be the one who ever gives up on it. Did you, like, at the end of the piece, I don't know if you got to it, but, like, essentially he doesn't believe that Rondo is going to forgive Ray Allen anytime soon. He refers to all of them as stubborn, but it looks like Perk and I guess KG, and he's obviously fine. He said he made, like, in the piece they cite that he made up with Allen a couple years ago, but they were all just very upset because they thought they had a longer window, and that also Allen took less. It wasn't even like he took an equivalent deal in Miami. It's that he took less to leave them and go to his biggest rival in LeBron and that Miami Heat team. I also think it was interesting that he, one of the things he was annoyed about with ESPN per the piece, is that they wanted him to talk about LeBron all the time. I'm noticing a trend here. Pierce did not like LeBron as a player and saw him as a rival and did not enjoy that time. Something that, reading between the lines, do you think that's fair?
Yeah, that's probably fair. But to go back to that Ray Allen sort of rift, I was trying to think, like, the all-time sort of, because you see, like, you know, Durant and Westbrook made up. That was like a 3-4 year thing. I don't even know. Durant and Draymond made up within like 1 or 2 years. I'm trying to think of, like, these true long-lasting sort of beefs and pettiness or little divides, and that Ray Allen one was going pretty strong, right? At least a decade, not quite a decade, but getting there. You know, to hear that this is all being made up now, everyone's getting all cool. It's a little disappointing. I thought that was like our one, you know, long standing. Because all this stuff, I feel like a lot of these beefs are just, you know, a layer thin anyway, and guys can just, you know, get over it pretty quick, which a lot of them end up doing. Yeah, how many of these can you think of where it's just spanned years, decades? Yeah, you know, guys, you know, it's tough keeping up a, you know, a sort of, what do they call it? Hold a grudge? Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
Well, I think it's Jalen and C-Web. Jalen and C-Web, right? That's still one, the Fab Five stuff seems to still be sitting there. Yeah. I don't think Kobe and Shaq were ever 100%. I don't know. There was that weird, remember the video, like the interview each other, like what did they do? What was that whole segment?
Yeah, was that 100%? Are you saying they're not 100% beef, or they were never 100% like beefing, or they're never 100% made up?
100% made up.
I thought we got, no, maybe we got there and we reversed back as possible. I don't know, is there something?
Well, not reversed back. I don't know. It was just one of those more of like, we need to move forward just like to, for pub, like, so people stop asking about the history of Kobe and Shaq and like why Shaq got pushed out and why we didn't get it. Like, I went back and watched the 2001 finals against the Nets and how they played and Kobe getting phased out and like just the way that team operated under Shaq and I don't know, like the way Kobe was wired back in the day, like I don't know, I find it odd, or I don't know, I just would say if I had to guess, if Kobe and Shaq were 100% cool and if he was still around, I mean, this is hard because he's not around anymore, but tragically, and I don't know. I don't think so. Like, I would just have bet if this was still going on that they would not. I could be wrong. Obviously, I could be wrong, and it's hard to figure that out, but I would say that based on that history and how bad it got, I don't know. I have my doubts.
Interesting. That's fair enough.
Yeah. I think maybe Katie and Westbrook still a little bit. They made up. Like, I don't know if that's 100%. I have my doubts on that one, too. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that one.
You gotta love how the NBA is part sports, you know, league and also reality TV show drama. It's really fun.
Also, the last little bit, and we'll move forward, is that Dirk Nowitzki was almost a Celtic. Like, Pitino wanted Nowitzki at 10, and they didn't think Pierce was going to be there. So if you go back to the piece, and like I was 8 years old when this was happening, so I don't recall a lot of this happening. But Pierce was expected to be a top five guy out of Kansas, and he wasn't. And Patino went out and saw I think Nowitzki in Rome is what it was, and he called Red Auerbach, and they were like, they thought they had their guy, and then they were one pick away. And he goes 9 to the Bucks. Nowitzki does. And then they trade him to Dallas. So Robert Traylor for Dirk Nowitzki. How did it work out for the Bucks and the Mavericks? The jury's still out.
Let's give it a few more years.
the jury's still out on that one.
Both got their rings in the past, you know, since that trade. So
that's true.
It did work out.
So we're going to do a big thing on this podcast. We're going to do new faces, new year, new changes in the NBA. I was thinking about different things we could do to make this fun little segment. And I have 5 new faces. I sent it to you. I was like, it could be a new coach, new GM, new player, and a different system. But like that, this is positive, only positive, that you think is going to be something that's good for this player and personnel person on this new situation. My 5. Don't laugh. Number 1, Gorgui Dieng in Atlanta. No Onyeka Okongwu for the majority of the season. Bruno Fernando was objectively bad last year. They really don't have a backup spot, and Clint Capella is so critical to this team and what Trae Young does and how much gravity he takes and just how good he is in the on the pick and roll and just the rim running. Capella has been great. He was maybe the second most important Hawk in this last playoff run. Dieng, I've always liked a lot, and I think his veteran savvy, and he's kind of like that Deadman piece where I'm just like, okay, cool. I like this. He'll play some stretch 5 minutes. He'll do what he needs to do. He'll be different than Capella. I like that. I like the new face, new place for Dieng in Atlanta. I think he'll be used well. Dinwiddie in Washington. I think Washington will have a bump moving on from Westbrook to Dinwiddie. I think he'll do a lot more fun catch and shoot stuff. I think the offense will be better, especially in crunch time with Dinwiddie over Westbrook. Pat Bev in Minnesota, I think, will be better than people think. I think Minnesota, if you watched them at all last year, they have had point guard issues since the last few years. Like, it's just, they've had a lot of trouble figuring out that spot, that lead guard spot. Pat Bev is going to make Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns and a lot of those guys' life easier. Hopefully he has a defensive impact, but I do think he is somebody that team very much needed, and they need some defensive mindset guys in that locker room outside of Josh Okogie. Rick Carlisle in Indiana is just going to be like one of those, like, lock in whatever. I haven't looked at what Indiana's over-under is at this point, but just go ahead and lock in the Pacers for the over in Indiana with Rick Carlisle. And then Ime Udoka to the bench, and Brad Stevens to the front office. I like this pairing at least early on. I think Ime Udoka is going to be really good for Jalen and Jason. So what do you make of my 5? What, and then we'll get to yours. What do you make of those 5?
I guess we got to go one by one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like the Jane pickup. Makes sense. You need the backup center minutes. He's really solid. I guess when you're a team like the Hawks, just coming off a you know, really strong playoffs, don't really have, there's no big move I think that was on the table for you guys, unless like you want to count, like, I don't know, Ben Simmons or some crazy trade like that. So just these little improvements on the margins, I feel, go a long way, especially if, I don't want to, you know, speak for what you think's going on with your team, you know, going forward, but you sort of just want to build on Trey, John Collins, and Capella, you know, relatively young guys, especially Trey and Collins. So they'll get better, and you sort of want to build on what you had last year. So I like that one. And then you had who's the next one before Bat Bev? Dinwiddie,
Spencer,
right?
Dinwiddie, yeah.
I like it. I like it. I think, I don't know if you're doing it from the team's perspective, from the player's perspective, or both. I feel like you're doing it more both. Like, I really love it for Dinwiddie just because he finally gets his chance to start and really have, you know, a lot of shots and opportunities to himself. Obviously,
yep,
he's going to be second to Beal as far as options, but this is
where he should be.
What, yeah, and this is where, you know, he's he sort of needed to be for a while now. But with the Nets, there's always been injuries, or he'd have to be the best guy because of injuries, or it was always something in the way of him just having like a normal, full, healthy season at, you know, at the starting position with starter minutes and starter responsibilities on the team. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, Bev. Who's the fourth? Carlisle? All right, Carlisle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great pickup for the Pacers. I would smash the over two. I'm curious what he entails for that front court. No one's been able to sort of get it right. So I wonder if he wants to take his, you know, take his shot at it before the Pacers just decide to ultimately split them up, because we know Miles Turner's been in some trade rumors. So that seems to be where they're going, but maybe he can figure something out there. I don't know. What's your last one? Was it
My last one is Ime Udoka to Boston, along with Brad Stevens getting elevated to the front office.
So I wanted to ask you how you feel the Celtics have done this offseason. Because in a frame of what they're trying to do generally, which I think is just sort of, you know, push the ball down to 2022 and that free agency, it appears to be the case. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. It seems fine what they've done this offseason, but I'm just not super afraid of them going into next season as a playoff threat to anybody, really.
I think they're a playoff team for sure. I think Tatum and Brown are just too good at this point.
A playoff team. The playoff threat.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think they're going to take a step back a little bit, but I think Schroeder is actually going to be really good off the bench for them. I think locking up Marcus Smart is going to keep their floor very high. I like that they're going to try to get him more involved as a creator. That's what he was at Oklahoma State years ago. Maybe that will take away some of those threes that he takes every game. Horford being back, I think, will be nice. Robert Williams is now the official guy at the five for them, and I think he is going to be really good for them for years to come. He does everything you want as a rim-running five. Shout out to Time Lord, but I think getting off the Kemba stuff is huge. Like, Kemba is not the same player anymore. And getting off that contract, I know this is going to be a bummer for you with Kemba being in New York, but I mean, you just had to deal with Elfrid Payton for a full season, so he can't be worse than Elfrid Payton. But we'll get to your Knicks. That'll be the last segment on this podcast. But I think the Celtics have enough to be smart and good. Like, they're going to play kind of like what I looked at with the Pacers from the last couple of years, where it's like they're not going to have a bad player in their rotation. Like, they're literally not going to play someone where you're like, oh, this is going to torpedo this five-man unit or this three-man unit. Like, I don't know who that guy is in this group. They're thin. I would like for this group to be a little bit deeper, but Boston is going to have enough every night to win. Like, I think their defense is going to be really, really strong. I like bringing in Hernan Gomez. I like Schroeder being, like, just coming in as a pissed off guy because of the money he gave up in LA and how he was treated in free agency. Like, he has a huge chip on his shoulder. So I think that's going to be really nice for them. I don't know. I just, the Celtics seem like someone who their offense is going to be clunky at times this season. I don't know who's going to be their leader and assist, but like, I think their defense is going to be very, very good. And I think, I don't know. I think they're going to be fine in that regard.
All right.
I mean, think about it. Like, here's their eight: Pritchard, Schroeder, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Josh Richardson, Al Horford, Enes Kanter, Robert Williams. Okay, so that nine. That's a really, really solid nine-man group. Can it win a title? No. Can it win the East? No. Can it be a pain in the ass for everybody in the East? Yes. Like, it's just smart. Like, they're mostly veterans. They're mostly smart players. Like, the ones that aren't veterans are high upside stars. Yeah, Celtics are, I think, going to be fine. I think we're going to have a jump up season for them, my guess. Your new guys, new faces. Who did you have, Vertz?
Yeah, I wanted to follow your lead with leading off with a Hawks guy, someone on your favorite team. So I naturally led with someone on my favorite team.
Mm.
And as you just mentioned, Kemba Walker. So I thought it was funny when you had that little, but we didn't get him at 30 million. We got him at $9 million, something like that.
You got him from the pyramid scheme that is the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah, you gotta love it. I don't know what was pushed under what table, but I'm happy it happened. Yeah, I mean, this is an easy one for me. Like, I think the Knicks get their point guard they've been wanting for a while. I think Kemba gets, like, a really good spot to sort of get his career back on track after these injury problems the last couple of years. And you know, it's less expectations for him, but he also gets to create a little more, and it's a more natural fit next to, you know, as opposed to next to Tatum and Brown, where he has to sort of play off those two, and they're the young stars on the team. Now it's just sort of the Walker-Randle show, and if Walker's playing close to what he was, and really, even drop off too badly. I know you're saying he's not the same player anymore, and he's not. He's not getting to the rim the same rate. He's not shooting a lot of the mid-rangers he shot. He's changed his game a lot. He definitely lost a lot of that explosion. But you look at his numbers, he's still, even in a down year, it's still 20-6, 20-7, relatively efficiently. And I think at the very worst, he'll keep that up, and that'll just be a huge boon to the Knicks. And for him, again, he gets the ball in his hands more. He gets to play back home. I think it's just a lot of good things going his way for his career now that he's, you know, got a chance to bounce around and, you know, end up where I think it'll work out for him. I don't know if you want to comment or should I go through all of them and then you'll pick them all apart.
I think we should do it where you get through them all and then I'll pick apart which ones are worthy of being picked apart, Bert.
Okay. The rest are boring. I think the rest are boring. I have Rudy Gay going to the Jazz. I think that fit is just really nice, like aesthetically. They sort of get that stretch four wing body that can defend and then do all the little veteran things while still, you know, still being good piece on the floor. I just think that's a really nice, again, one of these moves on the margins that don't seem like they make a big impact, but that's like a Jay Crowder-esque, you know, to the Suns. I feel like just a natural good fit for them. And that's a lot of what they've been missing, including during last year's playoffs. I got PJ Tucker to the Heat. Again, like, I like these competitive teams getting their perfect stretch fours and really help rounding out their lineup. You know, the Heat get their maybe starting four, maybe real four. I mean, it was Trevor Ariza last year. They were really trying to fill that spot, and they used to have Jay Crowder and end up losing him. So having PJ Tucker in there to round out the lineup with Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, Duncan Robinson, and now Kyle Lowry. Lowry could have ended up on this list too. Obviously, I just tried to keep with the random names like you, but yeah, I like that fit. PJ's going to get to compete for another championship and fits in well on that Heat team and that Heat culture. Speaking of guys going to places, I'm excited for Otto Porter. I think he can really shine on the Warriors. He didn't get a lot of play just for where he's been playing. He's been in Chicago. His contract is, he's been overpaid, and a lot of, you know, eyes aren't on him for that reason. But yeah, he quietly got better, and I think he's like a really great fit in Golden State, where they can use this wing slash small four that can sort of slash and shoot, and he'll benefit a lot from being on probably the first team where he has like real stacked teammates like this. And actually, I only have four. I didn't have a fifth, so I failed at this exercise.
Four is okay.
Yeah.
So run through it quick. Lowry, Kemba, and your other two were Otto. And
Kemba, Gay, PJ, and Otto.
Okay.
PJ talking. Now, you can count Lowry as the fifth, I guess. Okay. I don't want to go like the obvious superstar destination, but like Lowry to the Heat is.
Well, we can combine Lowry and PJ, right? Like, they just going to be a different team. I'm excited. Like, they're getting thinner. A lot of the Heat is just like, will they make it through regular season and deep playoff run with this group? Can they all stay healthy enough to make it through that kind of season? Do they have enough depth in the regular season to rest Lowry enough? Because Dragic is now, looks like he's going to be a Mav. You lose those minutes, you lose Kendrick Nunn. A lot is going to depend on Tyler Hero bouncing back from his rough sophomore season. I don't know. Bam probably has another level he can get to. I'm pretty high on the Heat. I think they'll be a top four seed in the East. I think they're high upside, but I am concerned about the mileage on Lowry and Jimmy Butler to this point. So I don't know. Kemba, I think, is a wash. I'm not going to lie. Everything is just going to be, remember that time at UConn when he hit that shot in Madison Square Garden? Remember Kemba then? A lot of it's going to be remember Kemba and not what Kemba is now, but he is someone who's easy to root for. I hope he has some fun moments in New York, but also just let, like, I don't know. He'll probably be fine. Like, he'll be okay. Like, well, are we sure he'll be better than what Derrick Rose was for you in the playoff series against us last year? Like, I don't know. Like, that's, we'll see, because Kimba was not good when he came back from injury last year for Boston. So perhaps he can bounce back, but I'm not certain of that. And then Otto Porter, I mean, maybe if he's healthy, he's another like a health guy, but will he get the minutes to make that kind of difference? But they really just need him to help out in the regular season. He's not someone I expect to have much of a postseason role for the Warriors, but in the regular season, can he help when Curry needs to rest, when Klay Thompson's coming back and help him along, like when Wiggins is deciding to get his cardio in instead of putting up shots, like when Draymond is shooting a little bit too much, when they're playing Wiseman too much at the five and they need Otto Porter to get some buckets at the pick and pop at the four. Yeah, I could see it. I think Otto of that group will actually probably had the most regular season impact, and then I think playoff wise PJ and Kyle is just, if they can get help, if they can just stay healthy and make it to a 4-5 seed, something like that in the East, then they're a terrifying team. They just have to stay healthy. I'm just curious to see if they can do it. Is that fair?
Yeah, everything except the Kemba part. Yeah. Totally fair. No, I mean, he's got, listen, I'm not like, I guess like, what's the ceiling floor scenario with Kemba, right? Like, the ceiling is he's like, can't even get back to Charlotte level.
No, that's not the ceiling. No, that's like, over. That can't happen.
Gone, right?
Yeah, it's like, gone.
So, you know, ceiling, we're probably hoping for like an efficient 20-7, right? Yeah. Like a nice, efficient 20-7, and relative health, staying healthy and being healthy in the playoffs and playing well in the playoffs. Mm. And then the floor is.
Are we sure the Knicks are a playoff team next year?
Are you trying me on your live podcast? Are you pushing buttons?
Are we sure
what you're doing? You want me to drop a hot take for you, right?
All
right,
hold on. Let's take a break. We're gonna do it. You can drop the hot take, and we'll do this because
I'll drop a Knicks hot take.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break, and then Vert's hot take on the New York Knicks because I've gotten him riled up.
I'm simmering.
All right, we're back. On the Chase Thomas podcast, where Vert's is about to hit us with a hot take, because people are wondering, not just me, not to go full straw man here, but people are wondering if we're sure the New York Knicks are a playoff team in 2022. People are wondering.
I want names. I want names. I want links. I want tweets. This is just a favor for posterity. So here's my hot take. My Knicks prediction this year is that they finish as the third seed.
Oh my goodness. What?
Yeah.
Third seed? Are the Hawks dying? Are we just torpedoing the season?
Words.
Oh, no.
No, I'm confident of this.
Oh, no.
I can state the case. Thibodeau team, Thibodeau regular season, they're coming back, basically getting all their minutes back. The only thing they're changing is a couple starters, Kemba and Fournier. The continuity helps. Going to be top five on defense or whatever. Defense in the regular season is going to be great. They play at this playoff intensity all season, so they have no extra gear in the playoffs. I have that to look forward to in the regular season. Yeah, I think all those factors combined and the fact that they were a 4 seed last year, I know it was a weird year, but they ended up a 4 seed last year and got inarguably better by, I think, a decent margin this year. I think they have a better case of being the 3 seed. I think you can make a better case for that than a case that they just regress down out of the playoff. That's crap. I've never even heard of that one.
Look at the East. The East is deep. The East is deeper than the West next year.
Deep like the East.
What do you mean with what? Here we go. You ready?
What? You're not talking about basketball teams.
Oh, I am. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Sixers, Nets, Bucks, Hawks, Heat, Celtics, Wizards, Pacers, Hornets, Bulls all have a real shot to make the playoffs next year. And we can even throw the Raptors in there.
Yeah. I agree with all that. Here are the reasons as to why all those teams will finish lower than the Knicks.
Okay.
Bucks and Nets will finish ahead.
Are you going to make the case that the Knicks win more regular season games than the Atlanta Hawks next year?
You know, if you gave me a second, I was going to credit you. I think you guys have the best chance of all the teams I think are finishing lower than the Knicks to upend them to take the third seed. I give you a better chance than Philly, that's for sure.
Philly's just a huge wild card. I have no idea what to do with Philly right now. Nobody knows what to do with Philly. We can't do anything until the Ben Simmons stuff resolves itself.
Right.
if they traded Simmons for like CJ McCollum, then we have to put them back like top three seed or something like that, you know. The Heat, I think they're not a regular season team. I think, like you said, like their whole struggle is gonna, you know, be around being deep enough to survive the regular season. And I just think also like they're a team that the more turns up the sort of, because they have to be on it 100% like defensively and offensively for all the cutting and movement and just high intensity defense to sort of like, Thibodeau will just push his guys to do that nonstop every game regular season, so that by the time they get to the playoffs, there's no extra gear. I think the Heat have this extra gear that they like turning to, and in the regular season, that's why you see them suffer, because they haven't actually had, like this Heat team we saw made the finals in the bubble, like they didn't have a great regular season. They went on a good run in the second half of the year to get into decent playoff seeding, but I just don't think they're a big regular season team. Well, Bulls stink. Charlotte, yeah, Indiana, they have a chance to make the playoffs. I think the Knicks are like clearly better than like the last five teams you mentioned.
I'm just going to go ahead and go on record. I don't think the Knicks are making the playoffs next year. I'm going on record. I think the Pacers, who missed the playoffs last year, are in. I think the Heat are locks, the Bucks are locks, the Sixers are locks, the Nets are locks, the Hawks are locks. I think it's going to come down to them fighting for an 8 seed between the Bulls, Hornets, and Pacers. I think that's
just... But why?
I don't believe in this offense. I think Randall is like going to take a step back. I don't think what we saw, like, I think what we saw in that Hawks series is more indicative of what Julius Randall is.
Why is Randall going to take a step back?
I don't think, like, a lot of the shots he was hitting last year, I don't think he's hitting those again this year. I don't think that's sustainable. I don't think the shooting's sustainable. I don't think him being a number one option is sustainable over the course of several years. Like, I think the wear and tear there. I don't know what RJ Barrett is. He needs to take a step forward. Where is the offense coming from? Are we believing that Derrick Rose is just going to continue on with what he did last year? Are we sure they're going to score enough? Is Mitchell Robinson going to be back to normal? Is he going to be a good player for them? Kevin Knox seems like a major whiff. Obi Toppin, not a great summer league. Looks like that might have been a miss. I don't know. I just don't think
they're pretty. He was all summer league first team. I thought it was a pretty good summer league.
Did you see enough that he's going to be a important player for the Knicks this year?
I mean, that I'm not gonna say that based off summer. I'm gonna wait until his actual sophomore season starts. But look, and I understand. Like,
I mean, the bad blood, Nerlens Noel going at Rich Paul. That can't be good. What does that mean?
The Randall and RJ regression. It's just that you didn't expect this out of Randall, and neither did I, and I get that. And so it's natural to think it does, but at the same time, every year Randall has improved when he didn't get hurt or he didn't have that one first terrible year in New York. Like, he's always been a work ethic guy. He's always gotten better. I think he's shown more every year he's been in the league, except for those couple exceptions. And I don't know, like, was it not sustainable? He hit those shots over a whole season. It was just once he got to the playoffs and the Hawks did a great scout. And, you know, I think a lot of things went wrong in that series. But I think the regular season would probably bear out more. I think it would just be weird to expect guys. Like, he's 26. Like, guys who just, like, stop being able to make those shots. I don't know. RJ, again, like, he's like 21. I think he needs to take a big step, no problem. He took a big step last year. He'll probably take a step this year. Maybe it's not as big as last year because he had the whole pandemic and prolonged off season, but I don't know. It seems to me I'd bet more on the natural evolution of a team. Like, young guys that played well will probably get a little better, and especially like the big upgrades with Kemba and Fournier. Now, so you're asking where the offense is coming from. Those are two guys. Those were offensive black holes last year. Those are Payton and Reggie Bullock, who can only catch and shoot. Now you've got multifaceted sort of creators. I mean, you tell me, last playoffs when the Hawks were really shading towards Randall and he skipped passing to sophomore RJ Barrett and Elfrid Payton and Reggie Bullock, and now it's third year RJ Barrett, Kemba Walker, and Evan Fournier. Like, that's a pretty, pretty big difference.
Evan Fournier struggled Boston last year. Are we sure he and Alec Burks don't gobble up too many shots in this group? Are we sure that there are, like, I don't know, Manuel Quickly, does he get a bigger role? He showed a lot, but kind of phased out in the playoffs. I don't know. I think the Knicks have a lot of...
I do... I do wonder about the quickly top in minutes.
Right.
Because you sort of look, and the Knicks just sort of like added rungs above them on the ladder.
Correct.
And so long as Toppin is playing Randall's position, and it doesn't look like he's getting a lot of play at the five just because you have Mitch there, you have Noel there, and he didn't get much minutes there last year. It will be interesting to see how those guys earn their minutes, especially now quickly, too. He's got a bunch of guards ahead of him, and they're all small like him, and then he can't like separate himself with a good, you know, he doesn't have a real defensive game. He's just another guy that's going to come in and score. So those two, I am curious to see how they get more minutes this year.
We'll see. Verts, what can we check out from you across SMY this week?
I wrote a little rotational preview this week. I think I did one more piece that I'm not remembering right now, top of my head. Definitely going to be putting up more season preview content, including the official exclusive hot three seed this year, New York Knicks, in 1,000-word format. And then please look forward to the rebuttal article for when Chase makes his case for the Knicks missing the playoffs. I'll file my rebuttal. It'll be double whatever his word count is.
Oh.
Don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe we could do an email back and forth. We can do a whole piece on this. We can do an email back and forth, the case for and against the New York Knicks making the playoffs.
I'd almost want to bet. It's such a wide gap. I'm like three seed, and you're over here missing the playoffs.
I think it's very, very possible.
I haven't read that anywhere. It's very upsetting. I thought we were friends.
The Chase Thomas podcast. I think the New York Knicks Atlanta Hawks series just put a huge divide in our friendship, Verts. I think it just, what happened in the way the New York fan base treated Trae Young, who did nothing to upset them outside of just being the best player in the series where it was not even remotely close. I think
you mean the conference.
Mm. The conference?
Almost. I'll tell you. Like
the conference?
I'm going to say this.
Mm.
Last year's playoffs, I earned Trae Young, like, I'm sure he really cares. Like, he's just up at night, every night, thinking, what does David Bertschreger think about me?
Mm.
But I got a lot of respect for Trae Young last year's playoffs. Like, he was just over there grilling my team for five games.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of had to sit there and take it, like, yeah, this guy's really good. This guy's really good.
I'm pretty happy that he's going to be an Atlanta Hawk for a while. Verts, we can find you on Twitter. @_Verts. Thank you so much for making the time, my friend. I greatly appreciate it. Again, if you like listening to Verts and I on this very podcast, go read his stuff at SNY. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com and email us at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. Verts, I will talk to you very soon. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me, man. Great time.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Tuesday evening edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. This edition rolls along where I am joined by someone in the kitchen cooking it up better than Todd Monken cooked up against Brent Venables and the Clemson Tigers. But a win is a win, and to figure out what happened in the Georgia-Clemson game over the weekend where Georgia won 10-3, I am joined my good friend, not that Ryan Adams, who is very upset that I'm doing this with him during a cooking time with other people around. Like, not the most convenient for Ryan, but because he is one of my best friends, he is going to be a trooper. Isn't that right, not that Ryan Adams?
Absolutely. I didn't say I was going to be mad.
Mm.
I thought it was a weird timing, but I'm down.
There
you go. I haven't been on this in 2 years now, so, you know, I got to take my chance when I get it.
It has not been 2 years. You were at my house last year.
I don't feel like that's true.
The in-person one, was that not January
of
last
year? 2 years ago.
Was it 2 years? Was that 2019?
I don't think we were doing that with COVID restrictions going on.
COVID wasn't a thing in January of last year, is what I'm saying. I think it was January or February of last year. I'm pretty sure.
Maybe you're right. Either way,
I might be right.
It's been like a year now. It's been over a year. It's almost been 2 years.
Okay. It's almost been 2 years. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, yeah. Ryan, your team had a good win. I mean, they didn't take care of business like Tennessee took care of the Bowling Green Falcons on Thursday night in Neyland, where I was, and it was a delightful experience. But, Ryan, give me your three biggest takeaways from Georgia taking down Clemson on Saturday.
Three biggest takeaways? That the new offense is terrifying because we have no receivers. So that's number one. We threw, I think our furthest pass downfield that was completed was like 5 yards downfield. It was very Jake Fromm. Our front seven is just absolutely disgusting. Jordan Davis he's the man. His post-game interview was probably the best thing I've ever heard. Whether there's two on me, then someone's free. Mm-hmm. That's just the ultimate player. And then I guess number three is, like, I'm in some weird spot where after the offense was so sad to watch that I almost want us to go back to the old offense we had just so it's something, I guess, normal and not depressing. I don't know. It was kind of bad. There was a lot of sweeps, a lot of quick outs. And it's just, after everything you heard in the offseason, it was just not what I was expecting. I don't think many people were expecting that either, though.
But do you think a lot of that was just because of Clemson's defensive front and just the personnel that they had, that they adjusted? Like, what we're going to see against UAB is going to be very different, I think, than what we saw against Clemson and South Carolina a week after that. Do you think this was just a different kind of game plan for what Clemson was going to throw at Georgia?
I don't know if it's that or if it's that they're just hurt. I mean, because Jackson was fielding punts, but I didn't see him as a wideout at all. I don't remember seeing him as a wideout during the game, but he was doing all the fair catching. I only remember seeing Jack Saint maybe a handful of times. So I don't know if Georgia was just that beat up to where it was just a bunch of young receivers again. I mean, Jermaine Burton only saw him a handful of times. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping it's just that was more of a combination of, the defensive front for Clemson, and then they're just banged up. Because it was just very, 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 very checked down. It felt very like a lot of check downs. But, I mean, you're right. You get the win, so it's...
A lot of teams struggled. There were a lot of clunkers this weekend. A lot of teams barely survived. A lot of good teams barely survived. Some teams that, like, we thought might win the Pac-12 went down to an FCS school over the weekend. So, I mean, it was rough for a lot of people. And to open with Clemson on a neutral side, I think, was big. I don't know. I just think, on one hand, I'm like, yeah, I understand why JT struggled. I understand why there were some problems with the receivers and problems going downfield, because it was just, they went downfield a lot more last year. And there's a 4-game sample with JT. That was obviously not the case, but you don't have Washington, you don't have Gilbert, you don't have Pickens, you don't have guy after guy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you don't have any of those guys, but the guys that were still out there, and this is the other thing I would think about, is just that, like, it's not as though they just had four Stetson Bennett's out wide in their stead, right? Like, they still had talent all across the board, like talent that other programs would kill to have, even though they're the fourth and fifth guys on Georgia. But then you're like, well, does Georgia know what they have yet? Do they know who to play yet? Do they know how to figure it out? Because, like, Tennessee ran basically four wideouts only. Like, they had Cedric Tillman, they had Velus Jones, they had Javonte Payton and Jalin Hyatt. That was it. They weren't cycling anybody else in. They knew what they had. They knew who their guys were, and that's it. They were just running them in 11 personnel sets over and over and over again. Georgia, I don't think, knows what they have and who their trio is, who they're for. Like, outside of Burton, who I was surprised was not a factor at all in this game, because of what we saw from him last year, he seems like he's going to have a much more diminished role on this team. But I don't know. I think two things can be true, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Wait, were you surprised by Burton? Who, like, are you concerned about the wideout room? And, like, what would you expect the three-man group to be going into UAB this Saturday?
No. I think, in all honesty, I think, like, what happened was best case, not best case scenario. It was the best case scenario to happen early on in the year. Like, that's obviously where you want that to happen. And I think, obviously, you look at, you got UAB next, who, I mean, they had a really solid game. I think it's good to have these issues early, obviously, so they can grow into it. And I think, you know, there's another thing that probably contributed to the play calling was, it was just as tight as that game was. I mean, you get that pick six at the end of the half, and it just looked like it was going to be that kind of a game. And so why take the risk? I think that probably had some kind of effect on the game. But the three wide receivers that I expect would probably be Burton, Blaylock when he's back, which seems sooner rather than later. Jack Saint, Kyrus Jackson, McConkey, like one of those, any combination of those five guys, really. I would assume it, right now it would be Jermaine Burton, Kyrus Jackson, and Rosemy. That'd be the top three, I think.
Okay.
But then Blaylock, when he's close to being healthy, and then is his name McConkey, the little slot receiver they have that did decent. Kirby apparently is super high on him, so we'll see. I'm not super concerned about it. I think, you know, there's a lot of factors that played into that, but it was still pretty disappointing to see, especially after you get done watching Alabama just like walk all over Miami. You heard nothing about. You've heard nothing but high-flying offense from Georgia, and then they just kind of come out and don't do it. It's just fun being a Georgia fan. You know, you can't, like, completely revel in the fact that you just beat Clemson because you didn't do what Alabama did, but, you know.
Well, I mean, I think that's the reality that you live in, because when you recruit at this level, when you have these kind of expectations, they're now number two in the AP poll behind Alabama. But there's just a huge, huge disparity between the two. But, like, Georgia still... Like, that defense is legit. There's all kinds of positive takeaways. They should, like, they look good enough to run through the SEC East and will be there for the matchup. And they'll probably give Alabama the most defensive problems that Alabama will have seen throughout the course of the year. That's all on the table. But you're not going to beat Alabama if this is how this offense looks or anything close.
Do you think that game was more of Alabama or Miami?
I think that was more Alabama. I don't think Miami's going to be that bad all year.
The impression that it was, I thought it was Miami. I think it's just going to get worse and worse, the disparity between the top tier of the SEC versus, I mean, what is Miami going to be, like, a good in the ACC? I think the disparity is going to get that much greater every year. I mean, if you look at that game and you tell me that the game plan that Manny Diaz had was the best that they could do and 8 months, I would have to tell you that that's player difference. I don't know if is Manny Diaz that bad to where he just got outcoached that bad and that poorly, like they did that poorly, or is that just the difference between Alabama's players and Miami's players?
Maybe, but I mean, Miami is closing the gap. They've recruited pretty well the last few years, so I don't know. We'll have to see what happens with Miami down the stretch. I mean, this was a doomsday scenario for Clemson as a whole. Like, this weekend was just the worst case scenario for Clemson season, because they lose their biggest game in the schedule. North Carolina goes down. Miami goes down. The ACC looks horrible. Like, this is outside of NC State, who I think is going to be really, really good. So I guess with UNC falling, NC State rises a little bit, but Virginia Tech's not going to have this kind of staying power. They're going to come back down to earth, and they almost gave away that game anyway against North Carolina on Friday night. But this was, I mean, Louisville getting smacked last night by Ole Miss.
That was just sad.
It was really sad, and it was one of those where I did not see that coming. I thought it was going to be a high-scoring back-and-forth situation, and it was not. It was just Ole Miss stepping on the gas and just not looking back. That was brutal. Oh, hold on. I think there is another targeting call. No.
Yeah. Watching that was tough. There are so many games to be excited about before this week.
Oh, and we should also mention Florida State, too, going down.
That was so sad to watch. like the fourth and two, and do two direct snaps on a, and then go for it on fourth and two on your own 33-yard line and fail, miss an extra point, and it's just like, God. And Mackenzie Milton comes in. Like, why didn't he start? He looked awesome. It's just, there was a lot of games that I was really excited for, but then it just ended up being like really disappointing afterwards.
I don't think Notre Dame Florida State was disappointing. That was a lot of fun. That was great. It was a great game.
I don't mean that one specifically. Like, that was a good one. But like Ole Miss Louisville, I was super excited for that one. So I figured exactly what you said. It was going to be chaos. Just nonstop scoring. But there was just a couple games. Like, I mean, even Alabama, Miami, like I had higher expectations for Miami than that. But yeah, this week was great to have all those games back. Like, it was great to have like UNC and Virginia Tech. Like, that place was just insane. Like, the one thing that that drove me crazy was it just seemed like all the announcers were like, just like they were off too. Like, one of the announcers for one of the games said like that Clemson and Georgia was a must win for Georgia, and Clemson could lose that game and still make the playoff. And I was just sitting there thinking, like, that's got to be the exact opposite of what I think most people would think.
It is, like, because Clemson needs a lot of help.
I think
now
Clemson's screwed.
Yeah, they need a lot of teams to fall. Like, they need,
like, originally they didn't have anybody that was ranked on their schedule, and now the champion, potential champion, or the best other team in the ACC has got a loss already. So it's just like,
well, I think what's going to help them too, though, the one thing that is the caveat with Clemson is that OU almost went down to Tulane. Like, that almost happened. So that's something that you got to watch out for, because if the Big 12 doesn't get a team in, or they have a one loss team, if it's like a one loss Oklahoma, one loss Clemson, and like a one loss, I don't know, USC, Clemson's getting the benefit of the doubt there. Like, Clemson, it's not worst case scenario, just because like the ACC stuff is terrible, but the fact that the Pac-12 also had a horrible weekend, and the Big 10 looks like they're going to get at least one, maybe two, depending on how you feel. Like, a one-loss Iowa to just Ohio State is a possibility, and we'll see what they look like. I'm not a big Penn State believer after watching that whole game. Wisconsin pooped the bed, but Oklahoma's not a safe bet to go 12-0. We know that. Like, they are
The fact that they're number four right now just blew my mind. Like, I could not understand the fact that they were number four.
Putting down the two-lane really green matters, wave is tough, man. Putting down that two-lane green wave is easier said than done. People forget that. Do you feel better or worse about Georgia than you did, let's just say, on Friday?
I'm neutral. I think it's like a net neutral. Like, the defense is better than I thought, or like, not better than I thought. They played better than I thought they would against that kind of a returning offense, like that quarterback. But the offense was definitely like a negative. So I think it overall evened out.
That's so sad for Georgia. Like, that's a huge win. It's a huge monumental win, beating Clemson. It's bigger than beating Notre Dame. It's a huge early season win. It should be this great, oh, Scott, like, everything is beautiful, things are awesome, and Georgia fans are, I'm sure you're not alone in this, just being like, oh no. Like, Alabama just steamrolled a good Miami team, potentially, like, they might not be that far off from what Clemson is, and just dropped a bunch of points, and Bryce Young looks like maybe the best Alabama quarterback Saban's ever had. Like, four touchdowns in his debut, first for an Alabama new quarterback. Like, Bryce Young looks the part. Their backfield's insane. Like, Georgia talks about their backfield. Bama's backfield's better. Bama's offensive line's better. The only thing that Georgia has over Alabama at this point is their defensive line. Jordan Davis and friends is going to be a problem, but Alabama's the kind of team that, like, yeah, that's fine, we're just going to pass all over you. And it's just, if you're worried that Georgia with Monken and Kirby and JT and everything was going to be smooth sailing after a full offseason, I don't think you can feel that way. But it's like, even with all that being said, it's an easy path to like 11-1 at the worst. At the worst, this is an 11-1 football team this fall. And
wait, who's the one coming from?
Well, I'm saying like that's worst case scenario. Like, Florida is a worst. Like, you lose to Florida or Kentucky. Like, that's the only thing left on their schedule. Because Kentucky looks a lot better. Will Levis looks legit. That offense might be good. Their defense is legit. It's at Kentucky. We know Mark Stoops plays Kirby close. So, I don't know. I think that will... I mean, I would bet on Georgia. But do I think it could go either way? Eh, it's like a 20% chance. Maybe 15% chance Kentucky could steal that, potentially. depending on how Georgia's offense evolves over the course of the next few weeks. But and then Florida, like, I don't even know what to make of Florida yet. Like, Emory Jones had a disastrous opening weekend, but Anthony Richardson looks like he could be a dude. So I don't know. Florida's another wait and see. Who are the guys from this game you're excited to watch going forward? Who would you recommend for people who are not familiar with Georgia to watch going forward?
Can't say Jordan Davis.
No.
No, he's, I mean, nobody would appreciate what he does. N'Kobe Dean.
Okay.
Or Adam Anderson. Those two. I mean, they're just, that front seven is just going to be insane. I'm not super worried about Georgia. I think they're going to be fine. I think they'll beat Alabama.
Oh, when you say fine, okay, you're saying they're going to beat Alabama.
Yeah. 100%.
See, I don't think that at all. It's never going to be a defensive. Until proven otherwise, my belief is that the first Alabama assistant or Nick Saban assistant to beat him is going to be an offensive guy. Like, it's going to be Sark, or it's going to be Jimbo, or it's going to be Kiffin. I just think where Saban runs into problems are the Hugh Freeze of the world, what Lane Kiffin did to him last year. Like, it has to be the super, super efficient, super smart offensive mind. And I don't think
that's fine if that's fine if Lane's the first one to beat him.
I could see it though. Like,
that's fine.
Right. I just don't know if it's gonna be Kirby.
I can see one of them beating him this year and then Kirby comes in and cleans up afterwards. I mean, I'm just saying.
It's possible.
But either way, like Kirby plays him well. Like, they play mm-hmm. him well, and this is a team that is made up of a very similar team that took him to the wire 2 years in a row. Like, a good offensive line, a super good defense, good running backs, and like a game manager at worst right now. A game manager.
Are you
at best? He could be.
How
he could be good?
Well, like, how in perplexed were you to see Will Muschamp in a Georgia polo on this broadcast? It was. I didn't realize how much it would just jar me in the moment. Where it was just, it was so weird to see him on the field in a Georgia polo. Will Muschamp rocking him. It was just baffling.
It'd be the same as seeing Mike Bobo do it now. It'd just be weird.
No, Muschamp's way weirder than Bobo. Bobo was there forever.
No. Bobo was there forever, but, you know, everybody hates Bobo.
Why
every
do people
Georgia
hate Bobo?
Mike Bobo.
He just, you know what he does? He immediately goes into Auburn, fixes Bo Nix, and then has Tank Bigsby with the number one PFF running back ranking after week one. By the way, right. Guess who's number two, Ryan? Guess who is number two after this weekend? Baby Alvin Kamara, Tion Evans.
Who?
Baby Alvin Kamara, Tion Evans, the JUCO transfer who showed out in Neyland on Thursday night.
Oh, it's irrelevant.
Not irrelevant.
He's going to go up against Georgia, and that's all dreams are going to be gone. Same with Tank Bigsby. It doesn't matter. What was Clemson's net rushing yards?
I don't know.
It was two.
Was it two?
Yeah, it was two. Yeah.
That means we can only do better than Clemson. So what you're saying, Tennessee, may be better than Clemson?
Could be. They could be the real orange team.
People forget. People are talking. We're talking about it on this very podcast. Ryan, last thoughts. Your last biggest takeaway as we wrap up our analysis of what happened in this game on Saturday. Georgia 10, Clemson 3. Your parting words.
Brock Bowers. Tight end number one. He's breaking whatever the record is for a tight end this year.
I heard that about Darnell Washington before. Like, that was all they were talking about was Washington and what he was going to do this season. Talking about the over-unders, would he get the yards? So is Washington just out?
No. You could run two tight end sets. Gilbert's coming back.
Noted two tight end set runner, Todd Monken. He's not doing that.
He has no choice. I mean, what else are we going to do? We get Darnell Washington back, and we're going to have true freshman wide receiver out there instead of Darnell Washington? Absolutely not.
I mean, this would be really weird for a Todd Monken offense, but I guess, yeah, change everything.
Okay, you saw this offense on Saturday, and that looked like a Todd Monken offense to you.
No, it didn't look like an offense to me at all. It looked like an offense that has no idea what their identity is at this point. Like, the Zamir White runs down the stretch, and like doing James Cook up the middle a lot was kind of weird.
It just needs to be...
Kendall Milton wasn't used a lot.
Only.
I don't know.
That's all they need to do.
They need to do what?
They just need to run those two. Milton and McIntosh only.
Well, like, they love James Cook, so that's not going to happen.
I like James Cook too, but...
And
Milton and McIntosh are better.
People are weird about Zamir White. People are weird about Zamir White. I did like his Instagram post.
Just runs the dude over and says he doesn't like playing with boys. Like, what a monster.
But it's like, he's not great. Like, he's okay. He's fine. He's just like another back. Like, he's not a Trey Sanders back there. He's not a Bijan Robinson. He's not a, like, it's fine. Settle down. Like, Zamir White is going to average like 2.7 yards a carry this year for Georgia. Like, it's
calm down.
2.7.
Calm down. Name
maybe three.
The last Georgia running back that averaged 2.7 yards.
What did he average last year? We can pull it up right now.
Well, yeah, he had two metal legs last year. He's good this year, bro. Calm down.
Is he good this year? Are we sure?
No way. There's no way he averaged 2.7 yards.
Let me pull it up.
There's not a chance in this world that he averaged 2.7 yards a carry. That might be the most lunacy thing I've ever heard in my life, as a Georgia running back averaging 2.7 yards a carry.
He averaged 5.
Yeah, I was going to say, come on, pal. Like, you're talking about, like, Florida last year.
But to be fair, Tennessee. 2 is not that far away from 5.
Yeah. I mean, I want you to look at all the running
backs
Georgia had last year.
2, 3, 4, 5. There you go. See, not very far. Mm-hmm. Not very far.
Yeah.
There you go. Not that Ryan Adams. You're back on the pod. New season, new time. Georgia's 1-0. Tennessee's 1-0. It's all gravy at the moment down here in the SEC country.
Awesome, man. I'll talk to you in like a year and a half.
That's enough. That's enough. Mr. Eeyore over here. Mr. Eeyore, Ryan Adams. Okay. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Appreciate it, Chase.
All right, hello, and welcome back to the Tuesday edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am now joined by someone who covers the maybe best team in Major League Soccer this year, the New England Revolution. It's Jeff Lemieux. Jeff, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, thanks a lot. I'm doing fantastic based on the fact that I cover the New England Revolution right now.
I mean, this is just a weird situation, right? Like, have you grown to accept that the Revs are just... an elite MLS team now?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I have been ingrained with the New England Revolution since 1996. I grew up in Massachusetts as a soccer fan. I was 11 years old when the league started, so I became a Revs fan in 1996 when the club started, and then I started working for the team in 2008. So this is my 14th season with the team as an employee, and obviously there have been ups and downs, but you know, there's been a lot of disappointment throughout the course of the club's history, a lot of MLS Cup losses, a lot of heartbreak. So you kind of get used to that a little bit. So this year has been a little bit of an adjustment for it to be a team that is running away with the Eastern Conference and Supporter Shield right now. It's something that I, as a Revolution fan and as a Revolution employee have not quite experienced before.
Well, as an Atlanta United fan, I hate it, Jeff, right?
I appreciate that you hate it. It actually makes me feel better that you hate it. So thank you for that.
I need Miguel Almiron back in my life. What?
Well, I'm a Newcastle fan, so I love Miguel Almiron now.
Oh, I just need to hang up this podcast. What is happening?
Wasn't as much of a fan when he was in Atlanta running over the Reds, but now that he's in Newcastle, we need to give Newcastle a little bit of a spark right now. They're struggling, but I'm big Miggy fan right now.
What has worked for people for the good folks who have not been able to watch any Revs this season outside of when they're playing their team? What has worked for New England this year? Why have they been so good?
Well, you know, what I keep coming back to is the fact that this is a team that isn't necessarily defined by any one style or any one system. Like, they have an identity as a group, but they don't necessarily kind of, they're not pigeonholed into an identity in terms of the way that they play and the way that they win. You know, what's been most impressive to me about the Revs in 2021 has been their ability to win in every way imaginable. So you think back to the win over the Philadelphia Union this past weekend. It's a 1-0 grind it out kind of game where the Revs don't generate a ton going forward, but they find the goal necessary to then get themselves over the finish line and turn it into 3 points. And they've done that consistently this year. That was their fifth 1-0 win of the season. Might have actually been the sixth 1-0 win of the season. But on the flip side, they've had games this year where they've gotten into shootouts with teams, and they've gone out and had to beat teams 3-2 and simply said, you know what, you're going to score some goals, we're going to score some goals, but we're going to score more goals than you are. So yeah, I feel like you see a lot of times teams are kind of defined by, well, we're going to outgun you, or we're going to go out and beat you 1-0 and kind of, you know, grind you into the ground. The Revs have done it every which way this year, and I think that's what's been most impressive to me, is that they've been able to beat teams in a lot of different ways.
If you had to clarify what's real and what's not for this group on the pitch, what would it be?
What's real and what's not? I'm not totally sure I understand the question, to be honest.
What's real? As in, like, the real stats and, like, okay, this is sustainable, this is something that is going to be here to stay with New England Revolution soccer for a while, for this playoff run, and this is something where I'm like, I don't necessarily... I'm not sure if this is not just a fallacy, or this is just a blip, or this is just not something that's sustainable.
Well, I'll say in terms of something that I don't think can be sustainable over a significant period of time, they've made it work for this season, but I think that's not sustainable over a significant period of time, is the fact that the Reds have continued to win despite the fact that they have rotated heavily and consistently all season. I mean, every single game, looking back, starting in May, the Reds have pretty much made at least 3 changes to the lineup from game to game consistently. And you would not expect a team who is chopping and changing the lineup and the personnel so often to consistently be finding ways to pick up results. But players have stepped up in ways this year that I don't think anyone in New England could have quite imagined. And Bruce Arena was open and being asked a few weeks ago, you know, has this team exceeded your expectations this year? And he said, yeah, they've exceeded my expectations. Bruce Arena did not expect this team to be comfortably 10 points ahead in a Supporters Shield race at this point in the season, especially using as many different players as they have for as many different minutes as they have. I think that's something kind of special about this year. What's sustainable with this team is, this is just a team that plays for each other. I think Bruce Arena has kind of ingrained a winning culture within the club. You know, I mentioned it's a club that has had a lot of heartbreak over the years, and you kind of come to accept that, you know, that things aren't going to go your way. And I think Bruce Arena came in with his pedigree and kind of instilled this mindset and this mentality within the group that, no, things are going to go our way. We are going to win. We are going to be winners. And I think that has transferred through not just the players, but the entire organization. And that's something that I think that will continue to stay with this club moving forward, that winning mentality that Bruce Arena has instilled in everybody top to bottom.
What has been the most impressive part of Bruce Arena's managerial chops this year?
Well, so, you know, it was funny because before I worked with Bruce Arena, everyone kind of has this vision in their head of the guy who is the most successful manager and head coach in U.S. soccer history. And you kind of think of, you know, all of this genius tactical knowledge, and you think of kind of this knowledge of the game so far beyond your comprehension and what that must look like. And obviously there's a level of that with any successful professional coach, but what's actually surprised me and impressed me about Bruce Arena is how simple he keeps things. And I think that is probably the genius of Bruce Arena, is that he really does simplify everything. I mean, we talk about some of the cliches in professional sports and taking things one game at a time. I mean, Bruce Arena hammers home to this team, you do not talk about trophies. You do not talk about the playoffs. You do not talk about 2 opponents down the line. You think about the game on Saturday. We focus on going and getting 3 points in that game, and then we move on to the next game. He legitimately epitomizes that every single week in terms of the roles that he gives the players, giving them clear, concise roles about what he wants from each player every weekend against every opponent, and saying, here's your role, here's what I need you to do, now go out and do it. It's just, like I said, I think you know, you kind of have this vision in your head of this absolute genius who must, you know, just be all over the place with all these different things. But Bruce is kind of the opposite of that. He actually simplifies everything, and I think that's what works for him.
The unsung hero on the field for the Revs this season has been who?
There are quite a few, and I'll throw out a few names before I get to my actual unsung hero. I think DeJuan Jones and Brandon Bye at the outside back positions, I think, probably haven't gotten enough credit for being, I think, two of the better outside backs in Major League Soccer. Tommy McNamara has been a revelation. He has played all over the field for the Revs and has consistently gone out and done the job. But the guy for me at the top of the list is Matt Polster. Matt Polster has been so critical to everything that the Revs have done this season. He's their bite in the middle of the field. He's their ball winner in the middle of the field. He's also so critical in possession, consistently leads this team in passing percentage. And when he went down a few weeks ago in Toronto, he actually went down with a non-contact injury, and he talked about the fact that he thought he had heard a pop. He thought he felt weird movement in his knee. We kind of thought in the moment that Matt Polster was potentially lost for the season, and I thought that would have been a devastating blow to the Revs if they had lost Matt Polster at that point of the season. Luckily, it wasn't nearly as serious as we thought it was, and he was back after two games. But I really do think that Matt Polster is one of the most important pieces of this Revolution team, and he's probably someone who should be getting a little bit more credit league-wide.
What have you enjoyed most about this year's Revs teams? What have you enjoyed most about watching them?
It's like, I think it comes back to the fact that they've been able to win every different way. You don't go into every game, you know. I think back to the Colorado Rapids team a few years ago that ended up winning the Western Conference on the back of, I think, something like 10 or 11 1-0 wins, right? And it's like they went out every week and they did exactly what you expected them to do. They went and found a way to get one goal, and they would grind it out, and they turned that one goal into 3 points, and that was their identity, and that's exactly what they did. I've loved the fact that this Revolution team, and I know I kind of harped on this earlier, I like going into every weekend not knowing exactly what this team is going to need to do. So is it going to be a grind-it-out battle? Is it going to be a shootout where they go out and score four or five goals? Like, the fact that every single weekend they can do whatever needs to be done to win, like that I think kind of keeps it exciting a little bit. And look, the bottom line is no one's going to care. If you come out of the game with 3 points, no one's going to care how you do it. But knowing that every game could be a little bit something different, I think that keeps things exciting.
I like it. In terms of what just happened on the field, they did something that most teams don't do, which is go into Philly and get a victory. How did they win in Philly?
That one was all about grit and determination, because they ended up playing the final 30-plus minutes of that game with 10 men. Looked like they were, you know, relatively comfortable. It wasn't a great first half in Philadelphia, but found a way to nick a goal off a set piece. Matt Polster actually popped on the end of a set piece and scored a great goal, and went into halftime with a 1-0 lead in a game that was probably pretty even. And then when they went down to 10 men in the 60th minute, you thought, well, here we go. You know, they're going to be under pressure for 30 minutes here on the road at Subaru Park against, you know, this Philadelphia team that's so good at home. And it seemed like it was going to be a really, really tall task to get out of there with 3 points. But they dug in. Matt Polster and Tommy McNamara in the middle of the field worked their absolute tails off. Brad Knighton came up with a few big saves when he needed to. Everybody just dug in. I mean, that one really was one of those games where it was like, all right, we gotta do whatever it takes to get out of here with 3 points. We're gonna have to scratch and claw and grind, and that's exactly what they did. And they've done that quite a few times this year, but Friday night in Philadelphia is probably kind of the epitome of that, considering they played down a man for a significant chunk of that second half.
Last thing, and we'll wrap up here. Is it fair to say that this is the New England Revolution should be the favorites to win the MLS Cup this year? They are the overwhelming favorite, or is there someone else that you're like, I think that this would be a problem in a final matchup?
Well, look, I think there are always teams that are going to be problems. Do I think that the Revolution are the favorite? Sure. I mean, I think anytime if you've got a team that at this stage of the season has a 14-point lead in the Eastern Conference and has a 10-point lead in the Supporters Shield race, how can that team not be the favorite, right? Now, I'll kind of, you know, add the caveat that it's Major League Soccer. Absolutely anything can happen. I think anyone who's been following the league for a while knows that. But are the Revs the favorites? I think how could they not be the favorite, right? But are there teams that would scare me a little bit? For sure. Even in the Eastern Conference, Nashville SC is a team that the Revs have played twice this year. They lost in Nashville and tied at home. So they took 1 point off Nashville in two games. I think this New York City FC team that the Revs play this weekend, they just lost to them at Yankee Stadium a couple weeks ago. That's a team that I think could be a problem in the playoffs. That's a team that could give the Revs a heck of a run. And then it's tough to say in the Western Conference because the Reds have only played one Western Conference team this year in FC Dallas. But I have been intrigued by the Colorado Rapids. I probably didn't realize until a couple weeks ago how good the Colorado Rapids were. That's actually a team that's got three games in hand on the Reds, and they actually come to Foxborough to play the Reds at Gillette, second to last game of the season. That's going to be a really interesting matchup. So, yeah, there are definitely teams that – but could absolutely upset the Revs in the playoffs. But I do think anyone who beats the Revs in the playoffs is probably going to be an upset.
Okay, there we go. What can we check out from you this week, Jeff?
Sorry, I did not hear that last part.
Oh, no, what can the good folks check out from you this week across the New England Revolution?
Hey, get over to revolutionsoccer.net. We got plenty of preview coverage ahead of a massive match this weekend against New York City FC, a rematch of one of the Reds' rare losses last weekend. So talking about that match as the Reds get ready to host New York City FC on Saturday night.
I like it. Thank you so much for making the time, Jeff. This was a lot of fun. I greatly appreciate it. We'll have to check back in again soon when the Atlanta United make their MLS Cup run that they've just been hot. They've been waiting for. Joseph Martinez ripped his jersey a la Hulk Hogan over the weekend. Who can rule out Atlanta United catching the Revs at some point later on this season? Who's to say? Jeff,
absolutely.
Jeff, thank you so much. I will talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chase.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.